Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This podcast is supported by Elite Sports Travel. Visit elitesportstravel.co.uk to view the various packages available to watch live NFL games in the US. Bookings are currently available for the Super Bowl in February and also the 2023 season in Las Vegas. Now let's get into the podcast.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, brought to you in association with Elite Sports Travel. And by the time you listen to this, the Neil Reynolds West Coast road trip will be underway. So from December the 3rd to the 12th, a group of British fans joining me in Las Vegas, Los Angeles and San Francisco, taking in three NFL games. So while that may be a little bit too late for you if you're listening now, Elite Sports Travel do have some great packages, including Super Bowl, regular season playoff packages. So it's always worth checking them out, especially with Christmas coming up. If you go to their website, elitesportstravel.co.uk, or on social media at Elite Sports Trav. That's Elite Sports Trav. So, check out what's on offer there. And if you are joining me on the Neil Reynolds West Coast road trip, see you on Monday. So let's get to this episode then, and it's with a good friend of mine, an old friend. We've worked together for many years covering the NFL. We worked together on the Inside the Huddle podcast. We've worked on fan rallies outside Wembley Stadium together, hosting those. We've worked on BBC Radio 5 Live together. He's now commentating on NFL games for ITV. You'll know him if you like the big Champions League and Premier League nights on BT Sport. He is the best commentator in the business, in my opinion. Here's my conversation with Chicago Bears fan and NFL commentator Darren Fletcher. So I'm very pleased to be joined by, well, he's my old BBC Radio 5 Live partner, the original Inside the Huddle partner, Darren Fletcher, best commentator in the business. Fletch, thank you for joining me on the wonderfully creatively named Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Thank you for being so kind. It's a pleasure to be here. I'll come on more often if you're going to say things like that.
Yeah, exactly. when did you first, so this is going to have a little meander through your fandom and your professional life. When did you first become a fan of the NFL?
Oh, well, that would have been, the season would be 1985. And it would have been about September, October of that year, right at the start. And what did it was, I went up to the local newsagent and I was looking for something to read. I used to love reading sports magazines and books when I was a kid. And there was a copy of Touchdown magazine on the shelf and not much else. So I bought it. And I ended up thinking, what's this? You know, so I stuck Channel 4 on that weekend. And I must admit, it was okay to start with. I didn't kind of dive straight in and go, oh yeah, I fell in love with it there and there. It took a few weeks. But then, of course, the Bears started doing what the Bears did that year with the Fridge and McMahon and Peyton and all that. And it wasn't then just about the sport. It was like this worldwide phenomenon that the Chicago Bears became. And then the NFL exploded in the United Kingdom at that point. We'd obviously got the Nottingham Hoods as well in Nottingham, which were quite high profile in terms of the local paper and that kind of thing. So you knew who they were. So it was from that moment on. And I remember Super Bowl 20 that year against the Patriots. I was chuffed to bits because I would have been, what, 13, 14. So there's no way that my mum was going to let me stay up and watch the Super Bowl. So I had to go to bed. But luckily enough, about a month before the Super Bowl, we managed to buy one of the video recorders where a three-hour tape, you could record 6 hours on it.
Oh, so you flash,
because otherwise, the Super Bowl would have finished halfway through the tape, you see. So the six-hour tape was perfect for build-up, game, post-match. And it was one of those where immediately it was the Super Bowl was recorded and I got the tape. I took the things out so you couldn't record again on that tape. You could take those little clips out on the video. So that was it, Super Bowl 20. And I remember I got up that morning, that early. I mean, I must have been up at 5. Before I went to school, I'd pretty much watched the whole thing. And by that point, I was just obsessed, completely obsessed by the Chicago Bears and by the NFL.
I love that. Well, that tape could have been an hour and you'd have still got the story of that Super Bowl. It was over before. You didn't need six for the way they manhandled the Patriots. So I've always known you, like when we were working together on BBC Radio 5 Live, as a Bears fan, like you just said. But there was there a flirtation with Green Bay when you went there? They made a real impact on you. You made a documentary in Green Bay. Where are we standing now on?
Yeah, look, so it was like a holiday romance, I think that was, you know, when you like,
good description.
Yeah, and anybody was saying to me, look, it won't last. Oh, it will, but it doesn't, does it? Holiday romances don't last. So I'd gone to Green Bay with Simon Cross to make a documentary on the Packers for the BBC, which was fantastic. And I kind of got thinking at the time, that was the first real genuine connection I'd had with a city in the US and a team, because we were there for a week. Mm-hmm. We spoke to everybody. We met everybody. The Packers as an organization couldn't have been more helpful. The players couldn't have been more charming. The residents were fantastic. And it was the kind of place that was unique. So straight away, you think, I've got an affiliation here, because this is it's kind of a bizarre place and a wonderful place all rolled into one. And then to go to Lambeau Field and see a game, and it snowed, and we just, you automatically go, yeah. I got to say, I'm a Forest fan, but I get a similar feeling when I go to the Bernabeu to do Real Madrid in the Champions League, because to me that's the biggest football club in the world. It's the best stadium in the world. There's the most history, etc. Packers are very similar in that regard, where they stand in the NFL. So there was a mild flirtation.
Just a flirtation.
An evening at the beach. You know, memories that will last forever. But, you know, in reality, we've got to move on. We've got to get back to them.
You went back to the Bears. I can't promise structure in this interview, because as you say stuff, I'm like, oh, that's interested me. So you mentioned watching the Packers at a young age. You mentioned being in sports at a young age. How old were you when you started commentating and pretending to commentate over games? When did that start to become a thing that was even in your mind, as like, oh, I'd love to be doing that. I'd love to be in stadiums doing what you now do.
I'll be honest, when I actually did it, because I never thought that was something I could do. I had a careers teacher at school that kind of told me what I should be thinking I should do. And that wasn't what I wanted to do. I always had a dream that I wanted to work in sport in some way.
Yeah.
When I mentioned that to the careers teacher, they said, well, forget about that. What about this? What about that? And I was like, so I left school before I should have done. I made a mess of the GCSEs, had to stay on and do some more of those. Then thought I'd have a bash at doing some A-levels, and got about 6 months in and thought, I just can't do this anymore. So I quit. And my parents were devastated. I don't know if they've forgiven me today. I think they might just about now, but it's taken a while. And I ended up working on a building site, putting up suspended ceilings. And this was my lot. And I was going to be on a building site and put up suspended ceilings. I'd made a mess of everything. But I'd got this knowledge that I'd built up over years of being obsessed with sport, reading about sport, watching sport, that was kind of tucked away in the back of my mind, but I had nowhere to use it. And my dad was an accountant, and he was an accountant for a guy that owned a gym in the city centre. And the man who was the sports editor of the local radio station trained in the gym, and he had a PR company as well. And he needed somebody to be a runner on an event. Now, they were desperate to drag me off the building site, so they put me forward. And I ended up working on an event called the Sun Life Great Race, which is a running race from Glasgow to London. They only ever did it once. And it was like the Tour de France. So they ran essentially a half mile a day all the way down over 3 weeks from Glasgow to London. And the finest distance runners in the world were in this event. The leader wore a yellow vest and all that kind of thing. So we did that. And I got put on air randomly one day, because my job was to deliver the copy over the line. You know, he'd write it and I'd deliver it. Yep. But I got put to air. And that was the first time I'd ever even thought about broadcasting, simply because I was doing it. And I didn't do it particularly well, but I didn't do it badly enough to not be allowed to stay for the event, at least. He never said anything about that other than, don't do that again, because we don't need that. I'll do that. You just stick to making the tea and filing the copies. I said, fine. But when I came back, he said to me, come into the office on the Monday. And I just presumed I was going to get paid, because he'd agreed to pay me the princely sum of £300 for the 3 weeks, which was still more than I would make in 3 weeks on the building side. That was about 60 quid a week. So I was 18. So I went in on the Monday and he said, would you like a job? Yeah. So he said, well, get your mum and dad to come and see me tomorrow with you and we'll sort it out. And he gave me a job. I went into the radio station and I did everything that everybody didn't want to do. Didn't earn a great deal of money doing it. But he was the kind of guy, his name was Tony Della Hunty, that he would give you opportunities. So he kind of sent me off, go and do an interview. Where? Forest. Really? Yeah. Who with? Don't know. Sort it out. And I'd go off. And I ended up doing that and I interviewed Brian Clough. And it was like this world opened up. But he always used to say to me, and he was right, he said, you've not come in through the back door, you've come in from the cellar door, because everybody else was doing university degrees and all that kind of thing. And there's Muggins off a building site, rough and ready, raw as anything, getting by on nothing but enthusiasm and balls, really. And then just over time, he gave me all his wisdom and I learned from so many people. And I've always been really fortunate, Neil, that I've always found someone along my journey who's been prepared to help me and give me their experience and their wisdom to make me better. And if you don't have that, then it's a longer journey. And I've been fortunate. I was in the right place at the right time. And it all came from there. And it's been, you know, steady steps along the road all the way to what I do now.
We've traveled a lot together. We've spent a lot of hours together over the years. I didn't know that was your educational journey, because Fletch, I got two GCSEs. I rocked up at college thinking I was going to A levels and they went, no, you're doing another year of GCSE. So I effectively got held back a year, did another year of GCSEs, barely scraped some A levels. My first job at the Kent Today newspaper, making tea and cutting out the stories that the journalists wrote and filing them in envelopes. I didn't realize it was just exactly the same.
Same. And you've got to be very careful when you say Kent Today on a podcast.
As you do
you
have to.
That, you can get into a right mess. I nearly lost myself my career when I had to do the cricket scores and I tried to read Kent at Canterbury too quick during a sports bulletin. That went horrifically wrong.
It could have been short-lived. We worked together, of course, on the NFL's coverage on Radio 5 Live. There was a couple of years there, 2009, 2010. It was really good fun. We were getting sent on the road to games. We didn't actually do a game together. We were at Super Bowls together, of course, later on. But you did some games. I did some games. We were separate. We were in the studio together. Could you please tell me the story of when you tried to get a taxi home from the game? Was it in Washington?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So we went on like a little, we went for the, I'm pretty sure it would have been the start of the season.
I think it was.
We were somewhere for Thursday night and then we were somewhere else while we were there. We did more than, it was a multi-city trip. We did more than one game. And we ended up in Washington, and they were playing the Giants. So I just presumed you went to Washington, D.C., and then not too far from there was this stadium. I didn't realize it was virtually a different city altogether. So we ended up getting a cab to the stadium, and we did the game. I can't remember the score. I can remember being blown away by FedEx Field, just how big it is. I didn't think it was that big, but
it's
it is.
Fast.
Yeah, and I was delighted to be there. And we then came to leave. And you're supposed to park and ride. So everybody was queuing to get on these coaches. And the coaches took you to where your car was parked. But if you were inside that ring, no taxis were allowed in. So we had no chance to get out. But nobody had told us this. So we ended up in the end. We'd stood there for ages. And myself, Crossy, and Greg Brady. We decided as a group decision to at least board one of these buses and see where you went, would it be any better on one of these? Because otherwise, we'd have still been there now. So we get on this coach, and it takes us to, you know, it's like when you get to the US, it's like here, the industrial parks where there's a bit of everything.
Yeah.
So we get to this gigantic industrial park, and everybody gets in their cars, the bus leaves, and that's it. I mean, this is like, I don't know, what time is it on a Sunday night? There's nobody around. Yeah. The stores are closed. Our three are stood in this car park, and everybody's gone. So we're still probably an hour away from Washington, D.C., where the hotel is. So we saw a light on at like a back door of this electrical place, like their version of Curry's. I can't remember what it's called. So we go there to see if anybody can call us a taxi. And there's this guy at the back door loading televisions out of the back door of the building into the back of his kind of van. And I'm thinking, well, you can't be delivering TVs at this time. And he had, no, I think this is a backdoor job. I think that the staff are having a few TVs out of the back of the place. So we said, can we get a cab? And he said, well, give me $50 and I'll take you. So we said, all right. So he said, but I've got to load these TVs on first. So we like helped him carry the TVs out.
Fingerprints over everything.
With his mate. Shoved all the, because we had to, although he'd still be there. Shoved all the TVs in the back of the wagon. Then off we went. And he drove us all the way back to Washington, D.C., playing the most bizarre CDs that I'd ever heard. Everything was a message and it was bizarre. It was about really random, bizarre things.
Yeah.
And with these TVs in the back that he had out the back door of the place. So he dropped us off. Nobody said a word. His name was Devane. The man's name was Devane. I remember that. I'm Devane. And we kind of got out of the car or the van when we got to the hotel, and everybody just went, what just happened there? And we were kind of part involved in a heist. We were complicit to all kinds of things. But if we hadn't have done it, we'd have still been at the stadium now in that car park. So it was just mad. One of the most mad experiences ever.
Oh, brilliant. We'll get on to you calling NFL games on TV in a second for ITV. But what are the games that stick out on the radio? Of course, you've done many Super Bowls. You did the Bountygate game, right? That champion. I remember being in the studio in London when you were on the road that night for the Vikings and the Saints. Which games really stand out to you?
Well, that was one because I always wanted to see Brett Favre play live. And obviously, Brett had that great year in Minnesota. We didn't know at the time it was Bountygate. I just looked at it as a very physical NFL game.
Yeah.
Of course, that all opened up again. The first Super Bowl I did will obviously stick, which was Pittsburgh against Green Bay in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I can't remember a great deal about the game. I remember meeting John Madden on the field, which was mad. I remember opening the curtains of my hotel and looking straight ahead, and there was the Texas Schoolbook Depository, which was like it blew my mind. So I went and did the tour the day before the Super Bowl on a Saturday, and Jordy Nelson was actually on the tour, the same tour.
Oh, wow.
I was on. Jordy Nelson was on the Texas Schoolbook Depository tour. So that sticks. But I think the one that just trumps everything would be Brady's comeback in Houston against Atlanta. And every morning, I'm probably like you, Super Bowl Sunday, I'll just stick a random, I mean, there's a thought behind it, but a random score prediction for the game.
Yeah, yeah.
So I never thought about this at all. I was with Rocky and Simon, and you started to feel that this was changing, and you knew the wheels had come off for Atlanta, and you knew that Brady could do it, and you knew that Belichick and the defense could do it. So you started to think, hang on. And then when it happened, great. But then when I went on to Twitter after, my prediction that morning was actually the perfect score. It was to the point. It was whatever it was. I can't remember, 45-38 or whatever. That's what I'd gone for that morning. So I was getting loads of praise from people who all had a quid on it on Twitter. I got this mad score where they'd all won a load of money. But I think that's the one that I don't think I'll ever see anything like that again. You don't see comebacks like that. And when you do see a comeback like that, you hope against hope that it's the superstar that does it. If you want to see a basketball game change, you want Michael Jordan to change it. If you want an NFL game to change, you want Tom Brady to change it. If you want a Champions League comeback to be what it is, you want Liverpool to do it to Lionel Messi and Barcelona at Anfield. You don't want it to be whoever right. it is. It just resonates more when it's that individual or that team or that person, whatever it is. So that would be the one, I think. But I mean, I love all of it. I love all of it in every way. I never feel like I'm at work. So,
no.
Yeah.
It's nice to witness history, isn't it? I mean, even a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't a Super Bowl, but, you know, I felt a little bit extra juice in the veins when I was presenting from Munich, just because it's the first one. And when they look back in 20 years' time and they say, well, when was the first game in Munich? I'm going to have my face on it, you know? So, I mean, that could actually, if you let it, that could overwhelm you. But I just was just like, it's great to be a part of history. When you see history play out in front of you, that's the thing with the Super Bowl. Touchdowns become iconic. The Philly special or whatever it is, you know, the Mario Manium catch in Indianapolis down the sideline. Yeah.
Which I commented on that. You know,
I remember we were doing the Inside the Huddle podcast still together then. So I if you remember, we sat in the end zone in the stands. I don't think we were allowed in the stadium, but we wanted to do it from there the day before the game. And then we met up straight afterwards. But those moments, they're iconic, aren't they? And they're going to be there forever. And to commentating on them must be great.
Yeah, it's the lights going off in New Orleans between the 49ers and the Ravens. It's things like that, you know, that you are there. And it's that indelible mark that you leave. And no matter how many you do, it still blows you away. It blows me away that you're able to do that. You know, I've had some massive moments in the Champions League recently where you just think, wow, you might never see that again. You know, the night that Liverpool came back and won 4-0 and the next night Spurs come back and do what they did, you're never going to get back-to-back nights in my lifetime again.
No. Like,
so to do that, you then kind of go, wow, you think about Real Madrid's run last season. That's the greatest ever victory for a European club side in European competition. To go past Paris Saint-Germain, Chelsea, Manchester City and Liverpool in successive rounds is just not going to happen again. And to do it the way they did, behind in every game, leave it late, score goal, bonkers, mad. And then you do that and you think, that brings its own pressure that you can't make a mess of it. So you've got to make sure that you can at least look yourself in the mirror when you're finished and go, well, some people will like it and some people won't, because that's the nature of the business. But at least I know that if I did it back again, I would do it the same. So that's about
how much. How much are you just reacting in the moment, or do you have prepared things? Because, you know, I've said this to you before, I'm a big fan of your commentary. I love it. It feels like a big game, and that's a credit to you. Like when you used to watch the NFL and it's Al Michaels, like if it's a big Champions League game, then you expect to hear your voice on it. And I think I said this during a message once. Mo Salah scored a goal at Anfield, and I'm all about Liverpool, right? So I'm going to keep this about Liverpool, being a Liverpool fan. Mo Salah scored a goal, and you said, it's another crowning moment for Liverpool's Egyptian king. And I was like, he kind of just pulled that out of nowhere. But then there's the moment where Origi sticks it in the top corner against Barcelona, where you are just reacting. Do you store away a couple of nuggets?
I think what you do is you kind of try and think what the individuals mean to the group. Yep. So during that match, I mean, they were singing their song about Mo Salah being the Egyptian king. So it's in your head. So you do think, look, if there's a goal, it'd be nice to incorporate that in. Some commentators may write those moments. I don't know. Some of it that you hear, I think you can't have made that up on the fly.
Right.
I think if you do that, you're cheating.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, that might not make me popular, but I don't. I think it has to be spontaneous. I think... If I commentate on, let's say, 1,000 goals, I might get 10, which I think that's what I want. And I might get 990 that I think they're all right. And they're on a scale of not very good to okay. And then 10, you get to say the right thing at the right time and everything comes out the way you would want it to if you wrote it down. Right. The most Salah goal that you talk about, it was a goal that I would say I got exactly right. But you could look at another 100 goals I've done for Liverpool and they're okay, because it didn't quite come out the way that it could have done.
I don't normally hear them, because like Origi's one, we can get from our playroom where me and George were watching, my son, we can get through the kitchen, round into the living room, and then back round and into the playroom. So I don't know what you said, because I was on a lap.
I don't either.
That's good. You don't know.
I don't either. But I mean, you don't know. You know, you might have a line in your mind if they win it.
Yeah.
So there might be something you want to say at full time.
Yeah, you want to sum up and yeah.
If they win, I'm going to use that line. And when they lift the trophy, I'm sure. going to say, right? When the goal goes in, you don't know the circumstances, the time, the status of the game at the time. And you could end up spending all week working out what you're going to say. And it will be irrelevant. And the thing is, you're so proud of the line you've got, you're going to say it anyway, and it's not right.
No,
so,
yeah, you don't force it.
I think you've just got to do it. You've just got to say, you've got to have it in your mind, and whatever comes out, I always think it's like the goal must be the equivalent of the cowboy breaking in the wild horse. You get on the back of it, and you don't know how long you're going to be there, and you're hoping that you hang on. And big goals and big moments are like that for me, because I'm not intelligent enough and haven't got as good a command of the English language as I would like. So I'm not that bright. So for me to come out with all this stuff, there's got to be an element of luck, probably 70%, rather than he's a wordsmith, so he's okay. I'm not. So I know that it's going to happen sometimes, but it's not going to happen all the time. So I just have to, you know, when the good ones come, I'm on that stallion and I'm okay. When I'm not, I'm like, oh.
How much do you have to adjust things from different sports? So from football to American football to boxing to the soapbox challenge, which is a regular in the Christmas Reynolds household. Love a bit of that. I mean, how much do you, I mean, that one's just a bit of fun, right? You're just laughing at everyone doing ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
But going from sport to sport, is there an underlying principle like you got to be excited, you got to be, or does it change a lot?
I'm naturally excited anyway. So sure. I'm the
just
biggest,
to be there, right?
Yeah, I'm the biggest sports fan there is. So my excitement is genuine. Sometimes people might accuse me of being too excited, but I can't help that. That's me. So I'm not going to change that because I'm buzzing to be there. So I'm enjoying it as much as you are. So I'm there with you. What I've always wanted to do is watch the best at what they do. So if I'm going to do boxing, I'll watch the best boxing commentators, in my opinion, and I'll watch the way they do it. And it's not what they say, but it's their tempo, it's their timing, it's their delivery, it's their vocabulary. So I think Ian Dark's a brilliant boxing commentator. So I grew up watching Ian do all the big fights on Sky. I think Ian's brilliant. So I would watch a lot of what he does, and I would try and take bits from him. Mike Costello's another one on the radio, brilliant. So you take a little bit. NFL, Pat Summerall was a genius.
Yep.
You're wasting your time trying to be Pat Summerall. I couldn't stand there in Cowboys Stadium on NFC Championship game, and the quarterback drops back and throws it down the field, and all he ever says is, Montana, Rice, touchdown.
You There's feel like you're right more, right?
Broadcasting, you can say three words to sum up the play perfectly, and it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. So forget that, because you're not that good, Fletcher. Forget it. Just watch it, enjoy it, watch it back again, and then try something else. But you mentioned Al Michaels and people like that. So you watch them the way they do. What do they say? How do they deliver it? When do they leave a pause? And in terms of football, Brian Moore was always the one that I think he's the best football commentator ever. So Brian, for me, is the pinnacle. If I could do one football match in my life, as well as he did a million of them, I'd retire a happy man, because he's on a pedestal. But I also would say, don't ever be afraid to reach out to people. So a couple of years ago, I reached out to Clive Tilsley. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for Clive as a commentator, and I felt I could improve, but I didn't quite know how to do it. So I called him and said, look, you know, we don't really know each other, but big fan of your work. Is there any chance that you could mentor me a little bit and have a look at some of my games and tell me where I could improve and what kind of things I need to do to get better? And he was gracious enough to say, yeah, absolutely. And we spent a few months then tossing things backwards and forwards. You could do this better. You do that well, but what if you did it like this? And he rounded me off. And when I'd done that, I felt that I got way more of a grasp on what I should be doing as a television football commentator than I had before. So I think that we're very blessed that we have so many talented people around us. And if our egos allow us to watch them and learn from them, then we become better at what we do. And I've always been someone that's wanted to do that. And as I said, I have people that will help me. Jonathan Pierce has always been a real help and a supporter of mine. Jonathan was my boss to all intents and purposes when I was a radio commentator. And then Jonathan would help me. So there are people that are better than me, so that you lean on them to try and get into their air, if you know. So that's what I've always done. I've always tried to learn from people who are better than me, who I respect, and then to try and make me better through that process.
So young Darren Fletcher running off and buying Touchdown magazine, probably wouldn't have expected to commentate on Super Bowls for on radio and all, and now on TV with ITV, which again is this game continues to grow in the UK. And I think it's a really positive thing that, you called those games at Tottenham and at Wembley, because it's just kind of, again, laying that foundation here. What was that like? And are you looking forward to doing more of that?
Well, this was mentioned about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
That somebody in the NFL office said, look, what do you think about doing it? And I said no at the time. I only just made the transition from Five Live to BT, and I was trying to establish myself as a football commentator. And I was finding that difficult. And I thought, if I go and do the NFL and don't do that very well, and I didn't think I was doing the television commentary very well either, I'm thinking then, as a career move, that's bad. Because people are going to go, well, he can't do that. So this guy's a waste of time. And he's quite unforgiving out there. So you go and pick him up. So I said no. And I thought that chance had gone. I then regretted it because I thought, you should have done it. You should have had the courage to do it. And I didn't. And I'm normally ballsy enough and brave enough to go, yeah, I'll have a go at that. And it washes off me and I'm all right. But I didn't fancy it. I'd ended a baseball game for BT with a company called North One, with a guy called Neil Duncan. Mm-hmm. Had a great time. It went really well. We did it. Nobody had done it before. So we just like had a bit of fun with it. And it was great. We got great feedback and it was fine. And I think we're going to do it again next year. But then Neil called me and said, we just got the contract with ITV and I want you to commentate on the games. And again, the stomach went a little bit. So I'm like, oh, because it's gone all right on the radio, but yeah. But I thought, yeah, go on, why not? And I've got to say, I've enjoyed those two games as much as I've enjoyed anything in 2022. I had an absolute blast. A great Grammy. Jason Osi, fantastic.
Yep.
Laura's lovely. Jack Crawford, brilliant. So, and the North One team are great, so supportive. Mm. And we all went in it kind of going, look, nobody's done this before, so we can't be wrong because nobody's been right. So
make your own, yeah.
Yeah, so we all went in with a, let's go and try and have fun with it. And if we get away from the stadium and think we've enjoyed it, then we're kind of moving in the right direction. Knowing the fact that some of the audience would go, I really like this. And some of the audience would go, where's the American guy?
Right.
Because that's just the way it is. You have a thought in your mind as to what you want to listen to. But I think Dick Ebersole, who, if people know television, Dick Ebersole is one of the great television people in the history of United States sports television. He's an iconic figure. He came to the US once and he said to the people at the NFL, where is your play-by-play man? If you're going to do this sport over here, you have to do it yourself. And I think from a growth perspective, we had to do it. Whether I can do it good or not, or whether somebody could do it better than me, that's fine. But I think at some stage we had to take ownership of the whole thing. You've done it and you've blazed a trail on the presentation side, and you've also been a pundit. So you've done it. So you've taken us forward there. But I think we needed to get a hold of it now and say, well, let's at least give it a go. Let's at least provide an alternative. So, yeah, and you know, to go there and do... When I was a kid, you couldn't do this. This was, you know, my circumstances when I grew up, I couldn't go on holiday to America. We couldn't afford it. America was,
right. If
I'd said I'm going to go to Mars on holiday, I had as much chance as going to America on holiday. We couldn't afford it. It wasn't what we did. So the fact that I'm going to board a plane in February and go and call that game on a terrestrial television network here is like, it's a pinch yourself thing, isn't it? It's just like...
Yeah, and that's why it comes across. That's the appreciative thing. That's why for me as well, I was a fan like you roughly about the same time, 84, 85. And it's the same thing. You just think, well, would the fan of then... You know, and that's the thing. You want to just get used to it. And, I go to the Super Bowl. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And I don't think we do. And that's why I think it can come across. That's hugely important to remember that.
And you know what? It's mad because I don't listen to what people say on Twitter, good, bad, or indifferent. I have no interest.
No.
I'm not on there to have my ego boosted or my ego kicked in. I'm not bothered. Mm. But I was at the boxing last week at the O2. And I was sat next to Richie Woodall, and a fellow was talking to Richie, and he introduced me to the guy. He said, I've just come over. He said, I just want to say, I love the NFL stuff that you're doing on ITV. It's been brilliant. And it's the first time anybody had said, oh, I like the NFL. And I thought, oh, right. Because if that one person enjoys it, then that's good enough for me. If one person comes up and says, I really like what you did, I don't need fanfares and trumpets. Just somebody saying, you know what, I really like that. You think, brilliant, thank you. And it gives you that little bit of belief that it's okay. But no, I'm really looking forward to it. We've got that for 3 years now with ITV. So two London games next year and the Super Bowl and again the year after. Hope it continues. And I just hope in some small way that it helps the NFL in what they're trying to achieve, which is the international expansion and to make it all self-sustainable within the cities that they're using, that... If in some small way it helps that in any way, shape or form, then it's worth it, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Last one, as you mentioned the fans. I just want to, we've had such great times doing the tailgates and with the outside Wembley, and some of those were just bonkers with the fans. I was just thinking as you were saying about the fans. Do you remember there was one time, and we may have to edit some of this out. Oh, no, it's my podcast. Don't worry about it. There was one time when we had a fan up on stage, or someone was giving us a load of stick, and I said something about the fan. I was like, it was probably after the cheerleaders or something. And I was there, he's never met a woman that he didn't have to pump up. And then as I turned to the side, waiting to come on the stage, was the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell. I was like, there's no way he didn't hear that. But when you're on the stage in that you get a bit too relaxed probably, but it is a lot of fun to be doing.
Look, I think that's the big problem with Tottenham. I think we lose that at Tottenham. I think the NFL at Wembley...
Eagles, that time you just asked everyone about the length of the grass.
Yeah, but it's that, you know, when you're there, you're at Wembley, you've got the big area, and it makes it a special day. You can go first thing in the morning, you can spend all day there. You it's an experience unlike anything else. Tottenham, you go to a game, and there's not a great deal to do around it. And if it is, it's difficult to do. And I think the special thing about this sport is that it is different. I went over to the US a couple of months ago, and we did a Tampa Bay game. We went with the Elite Sports Travel guys, had a great time. But to be there on Monday Night Football and be in the tailgate and do all that before the Giants play the Cowboys, we can offer that at Wembley. We can do that. And people can come and they can have that kind of experience. I think that's really special. I think if you could pick Tottenham up and put it where Wembley is with a bit of land around it, then you've got utopia. And I think they've probably got more chance of doing that at the Allianz in Munich, because there's quite an area around the Allianz, having been there for Champions League. So you can do all that. And I don't think the NFL should ever lose that element of, let's push the boat out. Let's do it a little bit differently. Let's bring some alumni over. Let's get you on stage. Let's get the cheerleaders performing. Let's do all of that so that people go, wow, there's a lot of layers to this game, because the Premier League don't do it, nor does anybody else. Mm. So I think, you know, that keep that element, work on that element, and don't lose that. And it might cost another couple of quid, but they get that back with the ticket prices. So I think they can probably just about afford it. Just keep doing that.
Yeah, I think that'll be all right. So what you're telling me is we've got 11 months to get fluent in German.
Yeah, well, probably, yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah. It's just a nightmare to get away from the Allianz. I've been in many traffic jams outside there. Don't worry about that.
Last one. So you watched Tom Brady's historic comeback. You've seen all the great players. You got to see Brett Favre. Is there one player or one stadium on the bucket list? You just, I want to watch that guy play, and I want to commentate on that player.
Ooh, what a good question.
Yeah, it's a tough. I know it's one of those ones where there's a lot of players to then suddenly roll through your mind.
I think there was one player, if I could go back and watch a player.
Oh, well, yeah, take it there. I like that.
I saw Walter Payton play at Wembley in the summer of 86. So yeah. Even though I'd actually seen him, I'd love to see Barry Sanders run the ball. So I'd love to see Barry Sanders have a game. I'd like to see Barry Sanders how he moves in reality. Because I think on television they're drawing it. I don't think that's real. So I need to see that in my own eyes, that a man can genuinely move like that. And I'd also like to see Lawrence Taylor just destroying people for 60 minutes. I think of the current group. I would like to see. I'd like to see Justin Fields, if I'm honest, because I've not seen Lamar Jackson either. When I watch Justin Fields run, I've never seen a quarterback run like that. And I'll be honest, I've not seen many running backs run like that. That combination of speed, athletic ability. I think they've got a superstar there in Chicago. And I think if they can get an offensive line and some weapons, they might not win Super Bowls, but they will be a perennial playoff team because they're going to be a nightmare. They'll have to put a defense together that can keep the opposition to 25, 30 points, and they'll be in every game they're in. So as a Bears fan, and having lived through Cade McNown, Jay Cutler, all these guys, Justin Fields now he's got a special place in the Fletcher household. So I'm just hoping that they don't smash him to pieces in the next 12 months by just putting him in situations where he gets broken. But I think I never thought I'd say, as an NFL fan, if I could pick one player to go and watch, it would be the quarterback of the Chicago Bears, because that just doesn't happen. But I would say Justin Fields.
That's a perfect place to end then. That's it. On such a positive note for the Bears, let's leave it there.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is 7-time Pro Bowler Cam Jordan, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
There you go. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Fletch. Always good to catch up with him, and looking forward to seeing him at the Super Bowl. Let's bring in producer Gary Hayes now, who is an NFL fan and a football fan. So, Gary, I'm assuming you quite enjoyed that.
Oh, it was lovely. You know what? I've met Darren a few times just by the stuff that we do together, but he's never come across that well. And I don't mean that in a bad way, in that he's never come across that well. What I mean is that hearing him talk about where he's come from, this idea that a lot of people will say to, you know, faces in the media like Darren, yourself, oh, you've got it made, you've got this. And then you hear him go, look, I was on a building site. Mm. And it's just, it's something that resonates. And, you know, one thing we talk about in my family is we always say, you know, some people have come from less and achieved more. But when you've got that working class background and you've gone and done what Darren's done and achieved, it's incredible. So I loved hearing that. It was really good.
Yeah, and I didn't, you know, realize we had almost, you know, very similar kind of journey, you know. And I'd been covering American football for, I don't know, 15, 20 years before I even got on TV. So you have to take a, you know, a long path sometimes. You have to work hard. You have to stick at that. And I appreciated his, you know, his kind of honesty around the commentary lines. You know, you can't really script stuff like that. People often ask me in a studio, you know, how much of your stuff is scripted? Well, the first hour is a pregame show where we touch on certain things. Can't script anything after that because I don't know what's happening. You know, you're reacting. You're, you know, there's a touchdown in Miami. There's a safety in New York. There's someone's been injured in New Orleans. So you're kind of just flying around, and then you have to be a fan. You have to rely on your research. But again, the big thing I always try and do with my stuff, and yeah, you know, I remember a couple of years ago there was the Packers and the Bucks in the NFC Championship game, and halfway through that game it was Tom Brady against Aaron Rodgers, and I was just so excited. It was iconic, you know, two legends going up against each other for a place in the Super Bowl
winning season, wasn't it?
Yeah, when the Bucks won the Super Bowl against the Chiefs, and I got a message halfway through the show, just a random message, didn't even know he had my number, from Dermot O'Leary. It was just like, your passion for this game is off the charts. I'm loving this. And I thought, well, if I can just convey that passion, then that's the job done. And that's what Fletch does every week, every goal he commentates on. And so it was really good to get that insight.
Dermot O'Leary's an NFL fan. He needs to come on here, Neil.
I think he might be one for the future, Gary. We'll get him on.
I don't need to ask who's on next week now, do I?
No, there you go. that was really a lot of fun. And
it's no mean feat
to be able to commentate on different sports. What was you going to say, Gary?
Well, what's great about it as well is because it's when we do these mailbags, I know we're not fielding questions from fans this week, but when we do these and, you know, people will ask you questions about, oh, how can I do this? And I see the questions and I understand where people are coming from because they're like, I just want to get to the dream place. And they sort of forget what goes in between the starting out and getting to the dream, right? There's all that other stuff that goes in between. But when you hear Darren talking, it's just like, look, anyone who is not necessarily young but is looking for a career change or anything, you know, Darren, like he was so honest. Look, I flunked my GCSEs. I gave up with my A-levels, but I still ended up doing, like you said, he goes, I didn't realise this is what I wanted to do. I just knew I love sport.
But
anyone listening that wants to go on and achieve something, you know, not necessarily the media, because people think the media is the pinnacle or whatever. It's not. There's so much more you can do in sport. And obviously we talk about it, right, for a living. I'd love to play it instead, just for the fun of it, regardless of the finances. But, you know, to hear Darren say that, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. And I had a similar experience with my careers advisor when they said to me when I was younger, it was a parents' evening, and my dad was with me, and they said, oh, we need to speak to you. And my dad was like, what have you done? I was like, I haven't done anything, Dad. And they said, oh, Gary's got this dream. He keeps talking about he wants to go and work for Chelsea. You need to let him know that kids from the estate don't do that. And my dad just stood up and went, we're going. And they went, what? And he goes, you can't tell my son not to dream about something you want to do. And I did it.
Yeah.
So I was I told you careers advisor I was going to do it. And I might be from the estate and I might have an accent, but I did it.
Well, the careers advisors on this program today are 0-3 because I got told when I was about 13 or 14, you can't be a journalist. It's too competitive. And I've been a journalist for many years.
And here
now,
you are, Neil, getting the respect of fans where they talk about you being, you know, and Darren said there about the stuff you've done to advance the NFL in the UK and stuff. And so it's just nice. Anyone young listening to this, just go with what you want and don't listen to someone putting you down.
Don't listen to your career.
I love this interview. It was really good. I really liked doing it. It was a surprise one. And yeah, I really enjoyed listening to that.
Good, good. Well, thank you, Gary. Thanks again to Darren Fletcher. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week, not with Dermot O'Leary just yet, but with another special guest on the Neil Reynolds podcast in association with Elite Sports Travel. Thank you. And yeah, see you on the other side, as they say. Been listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast brought to you by Elite Sports Travel. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Jackie Anklin, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast and help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and review wherever you're listening. This has been a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.
Hey, friend. I know how it feels, waking up exhausted after multiple trips to the bathroom and feeling embarrassed by sudden leaks. I used to be constantly on edge, searching for a restroom whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Woman. I was skeptical at first, but 2 months in, everything changed. I experienced improved bladder control. No more heart-stopping moments when I laugh or sneeze, less urge to go, deeper and more restful sleep. I finally felt like myself again, confident and in control. Better Woman is natural, effective, and trusted by women for over 25 years. Ready to take back your control? Head over to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Uses directed, individual results may vary.